Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hello and welcome to Inside Politics. I'm John King in Washington. Thank you sharing your day with us. A jobs report conundrum. Robust hiring last month proves the economy is strong and resilient to recession, but it also shows the Fed's efforts to slow growth some will not get easier anytime soon. Plus, President Joe Biden tries to rewrite the Democratic primary calendar by putting South Carolina first. That shift doubles as a signal. Right now, he's dead set on running again in 2024. And today, only 4 days left in a critical Georgia Senate showdown. A brand new CNN poll shows the Democrat with a narrow lead. The stakes are giant. The sniping, well, pointed.
Since the last time I was here, Mr. Walker has been talking about issues that are of great importance to the people of Georgia. Like whether it's better to be a vampire or a werewolf. This is a debate that I must confess I once had myself. When I was 7.
Back to politics in a moment, but up first for us, the monthly measure of the economy giving us a clear new evidence that a recession is not here right now. And evidence too, though, that the Fed's push to tame inflation is facing major resistance. Here are the top line numbers. 263,000 jobs added last month. That beat expectations. And it happens, of course, in the middle of a wave of layoffs that have been triggering alarm and headlines. The unemployment rate holding steady from last month, 3.7%. Go sector by sector, and what you see is growth, wages trending up too, in a big way. But therein lies the rub. Too hot wage growth will prop up inflation. The president a short time ago says, though, he sees reasons for optimism.
We're in a position now where things are moving. They're moving in the right direction. As we go into the holiday season, here's what this all means. The Americans are working, the economy is growing, wages are rising faster than inflation, and we've avoided a catastrophic rail strike.
With me in studio to share their reporting and their insights, Margaret Taleb of Axios, Zolan Cano Youngs of The New York Times, Gina Smilek, also of The New York Times, and CNN's Manu Raju here as well. Gina Smilek, this is your wheelhouse. So you look at this report, 263,000 new jobs, 3.7% unemployment rate, sector by sector, everything but retail trending in the right direction. So why are people a bit nervous about a good jobs report?
All about inflation at this stage. So the Federal Reserve has been very closely watching the jobs market, which it says is out of balance. There are just too many people trying to hire workers relative to the number of workers who are available. And this was further confirmation that it remains out of balance. The Fed, just for context, thinks that about 100,000 jobs need to get added every month just to make up for population gains. We're at more than 2.5 times that, and we have been pretty steadily all year long. So this is just a very strong labor market, far stronger than what the Fed would be hoping to see to feel confident that the economy is slowing down enough to bring inflation back down to its target.
So then let me stick with you for a second. The idea that the Fed has said it will continue to raise rates. It has also suggested those rate increases, at least for the next one or two, would be slightly more modest. Does this report change that and add in this part? Mark Zandi, the chief economist at Moody's Analytics, says this. It's going to be a struggle. It's going to feel uncomfortable, but I think we're going to thread the needle. The data over the last couple of months have been better than I would have thought. None of the financial market indicators suggest we have a recession dead ahead. Does this jobs report change that dynamic at all, or is it still possible, with all the caveats and asterisks, that you can land the plane without a recession?
I think we are still trying to thread that needle. It is still possible, but what this jobs report tells us is it's going to be a longer road. So the Fed's clearly recalibrating its policy. It's going more slowly, but it is going to push those rates up a little bit higher than it had previously suggested it would, as Chair Powell suggested this week. I think that sort of MO basically remains intact after this jobs report. But I think the second part of it becomes all the more important. You know, this is a very strong economy. It may take higher interest rates and interest rates that stay high for longer to really slow it back down.
And so that gets into a fascinating political calculation as you move into the next year. The Republicans are going to take the House inside of 30 days or about 30 days from now. President Biden, if he wanted to do something, if he thought there was some legislative juice or help or fix, probably can't get it done with a Republican House. So this is the president on the road yesterday saying, I'm on top of this. I'll do the best I can, but I think we're in a better place.
Inflation at the grocery stores, thank God, beginning to slow. Prices for things like clothes, television, and appliances are going down. That's good news for the holiday season. It's going to take time to get inflation back to normal levels as we keep the job market resilient. And we could see setbacks along the way. But we're laser focused on this, Leigh. I promise you, we're laser focused on this.
Did you catch the theme? I feel like laser might be a recurring word there. This is Biden's reelection plan. This plus Donald Trump staying in the game at least long enough to make things crazy. And you can see it in the very consistent rhetorical messaging. Gas prices are down. You can see it in his laser focus on averting that rail strike, even if it meant putting the paid leave issue aside for the time being, very unpopular with the core labor, but incredibly important to keeping things smooth through the Christmas season. And he's been actually pretty transparent about all that. And I think Newt Gingrich, the former House Speaker, Republican activist, has a column that everyone should read if they haven't read yet this week, telling Republicans to stop underestimating Joe Biden, that he had one of the best first-term off-year elections in history, saying Biden's actually been pretty effective. This is about two things. This is about Trump and infighting, and this is about the economy. Biden is going to stay focused on the economy. That's his path back.
Right. And psychologically convincing people, look, this has been tough. I understand how hard this is and has been on you. And we're not out of it yet, but we are getting better. And because of my policies, this is his argument. You can agree or disagree with it at home. Because of my policies, we're in a better place than we could have been. And if it goes south from here, it's their fault.
Right. No, absolutely. I mean, you even saw it. Him say something like that just this morning, right? Just a little while ago, where he said, in terms of referencing the rail strike and the agreement that he signed, look, I know this was tough for members of both party to do this. This was also tough for me. He at one point said this was a tough choice. And by that, he was basically acknowledging that something like the rail strike, when you combine that with the inflation that people are feeling right now, would have been devastating for the economy and particularly for consumers, even to the point where a president who has not been shy to celebrate his bona fides and working for unions was willing to sign an agreement that didn't go all the way for some union members in terms of getting enough paid leave that they want.
But there's so many question marks about the legislative landmines ahead. I mean, they did avert this rail strike by passing this.
Right, but Democrats still control the House.
Exactly. That's my point. Kevin McCarthy, the House Republican leader who wants to be the Speaker, opposed this. Would he have put something like this on the floor? I asked him about his position on this. He said Biden should have solved this. This is Biden's fault. And there are other legislative landmines ahead that could have an impact on the economy. Just this month, there's a major push to get a year-long spending bill done. This is a massive proposal to fund the entire federal government. It's very possible they don't get a deal and they have to do a continuing resolution, essentially a stopgap measure to force the new Congress, the divided Congress, to deal with that. That could be problematic. Also, they're going to have to raise the debt limit in the new Congress to avoid a potential default. All these big things, how do they get there? It's going to be a mess, and it could have real economic consequences.
And to that point, as someone who builds your list, right, what am I looking for next, right? When's the next Fed meeting? When's the next inflation report? This political volatility and uncertainty adds things that are a little harder to track. It's not a monthly report. It's not data. It's the Wild West of politics.
Yeah, absolutely. And the political volatility here is just feeding into a very volatile global political environment, right? We've seen these protests in China. We don't know how those are going to play out in the longer run. If China reopens, it could mean this big demand shock. It could mean that we've got Chinese consumers buying stuff, competing with American consumers again next year. It's a real question. There's a lot ahead that could roil inflation in 2023.
That's why we'll keep inviting you back to sit right there in that seat to explain it to the rest of us. Up next, we go live to Georgia. Early voting in the Senate runoff ends today. And new CNN polling shows the Democrat Raphael Warnock clinging to a narrow lead over his Republican challenger, Herschel Walker. Today is the final day of early voting in Georgia's Senate runoff between the Democratic incumbent Raphael Warnock and his Republican challenger, Herschel Walker. So far, record early turnout and eye-popping spending by both parties. Our new CNN poll releasing today, you see it there, shows Senator Warnock with a small lead. Democrats will control the Senate now, no matter who wins on Tuesday. But as both candidates get some high-powered help in these final days, both sides publicly acknowledge having 51 Democrats instead of 50 makes a bigger difference than you might imagine.
An extra senator gives Democrats more breathing room on important bills. It prevents one person from holding up everything. And it also puts us in a better position a couple years from now.
If it's 50-50, the budgets are the same. The number of committee people is the same. If it's 51-49, they have one more vote on every committee than us. The bottom line, it really changes the structure of the Senate.
Let's go straight now live to Atlanta. CNN's Eva McKendis is there tracking this race for us. Eva, what's the latest?
Well, good afternoon to you, John. I want to begin by showing you this line here at this polling site in Atlanta. Just a steady stream of folks all day. People here tell us it takes them about 45 minutes to get through this line. All in all, not so bad, because other sites this week that we've been to, it's been upwards of 2 hours. More than a million people have come out during this early vote period in Georgia. And I think that really speaks to the level of engagement here. People are clued in. It is impossible not to be in Georgia. Between those radio and television ads, you cannot ignore this runoff contest. We've also seen quite a bit of star power on the campaign trail. Former President Barack Obama on the trail last night in support of Senator Warnock. He was also here just a few weeks ago during the general election. There's also been a bevy of Hollywood celebrities, too. America Ferrera, Tessa Thompson, Dulé Hill, all in support of Senator Warnock. Meanwhile, Herschel Walker has pretty much been joined on the trail by Senate Republicans, chief among them, Senator Lindsey Graham. Both of the candidates crisscrossing the state today. We're still learning, waiting to learn Herschel Walker's weekend schedule. We do know, though, that Senator Warnock is going to be returning to a college campus over the weekend. I think that is noteworthy because he has spent quite a bit of time, John, emphasizing the youth vote. John?
Eva McKen, live on the ground for us. Critical final weekend. Eva, thank you. We'll be in touch, obviously, in the days ahead. Our reporters are back at the table to discuss. Senator Lindsey Graham and Barack Obama, I saw the nodding, some shrugging at the table. They might not be exactly right about how it all plays out, but it is hugely different. It might not, at home, you think 51-50, what's the big deal?
Yeah.
It does in the terms of the subpoena power, committee hearings. And
yeah, I mean,
like
look, in because there's a divided government, it probably would not have as much of an impact as it were if there was one party control, because in the one party control, as we saw this time, they passed what used the budget process, which could circumvent a filibuster in the Senate, meaning you could pass bills along straight party lines, which is why Joe Manchin had so much power this Congress, because they tried to do everything in those big bills in the Senate along straight party lines. So if he said no, it wasn't going to happen. You get the additional senator. That helps. In the new Congress, we have a Republican House, a Democratic Senate, so very little is going to get accomplished anyways. Yes, it will change some of the committee structure. You may have one more seat margin than you do as a deadlocked Senate, but there are ways to get around that procedurally in the Senate. So it may not have as huge of an impact as they're saying, but every Senate vote does count, especially as we get into future election cycles when they're going to be battling one or two seats to take the majority. An additional seat will be crucial.
And before we get to that, every vote counts. And so it's encouraging, whether you're Democrat or Republican, to see this record early voting. You see the long lines where Eva was in Atlanta there, largely Democratic in Atlanta. But we've seen large early voting in other parts of the state as well, where you have more Republican voters. Here's our latest poll released just this morning. 52% for the Democratic incumbent, 48% for the Republican challenger, Herschel Warnock. If you dig deep in it, this is interesting to me. Do you view these candidates as favorable or unfavorable? Senator Warnock, who's the incumbent, 50% favorable, 45% unfavorable. Herschel Walker, you know, football hero, University of Georgia, went on to play in the NFL and the USFL. 39% favorable, 52% unfavorable. It is interesting that the political newcomer has the higher unfavorable rating here. He's being treated almost like the politician, or is it just because the toll of this campaign, people have more doubts?
I think he's run a pretty disastrous campaign, and that if he somehow emerges to prevail, in this runoff contest that Brian Kemp will immediately go to the top of the heap for GOP presidential contenders, because it will be all Governor Kemp who has helped push Herschel Walker forward. He's had a number of personal scandals, controversies that have come forward. And one of the most popular ads by Raphael Warnock's campaign right now is just voters watching Herschel Walker say goofy things on the stump that are kind of non sequiturs. Also, his ties to Donald Trump have been problematic in a state like Georgia. But when you look at that polling, that very good thorough CNN polling, you see how close the race still is anyway, which is why that turnout really, really matters. And, you know, what we know about the general election returns is that around the country, black voters just did not come out en masse with as much strength as they did in the previous election. There are signs that that is different in this runoff, which is really interesting. Talk about the youth voters, Max Frost, the incoming 25-year-old youngest ever member of Congress from Florida who is black and Hispanic, is going to be one of the kind of political celebrities brought out over the weekend to try to turn out the youth vote in Atlanta.
And so let's look a little bit before you jump in. Just a contrast in the final seconds. Margaret made the point about the Warnock ads. That was part of Obama's mission, too, that Herschel Walker is not serious. Listen.
Since the last time I was here, Mr. Walker has been talking about issues that are of great importance to the people of Georgia, like whether it's better to be a vampire or a werewolf. In case you're wondering, by the way, Mr. Walker decided he wanted to be a werewolf, which is great. As far as I'm concerned, he can be anything he wants to be, except for a United States senator.
Obama trying to join the Democratic effort to say Walker's just not up to the job. He is not serious. Walker, in this, listen to this, this is yesterday, understanding 200,000 people voted for Governor Kemp's reelection, did not vote for him. He's trying to get Republicans who don't like Biden administration policies, but who also don't like him to come over. Here he is on vaccine mandates.
20,000, I want to tell you, is active duty warriors in the United States military that's being kicked out by Joe Biden and Raphael Warnock for not taking that COVID shot. Yes. And then 40,000, a National Guardsman that's being cut out of their military benefit by Joe Biden and Raphael Warnock for not taking that COVID shot. Because I think that's immoral, and I think it's treason.
You see him there trying to scratch his way back into being more of a traditional Republican candidate, which if people viewed him that way in a state like Georgia, he would have a better shot.
And you're seeing him do something that a lot, that many members of the Republican Party say wasn't done enough by some candidates leading up to the midterms, which is actually focusing on the Biden administration, not just the previous presidential election, or trying to kind of pledge your loyalty to the former president as well. Right there, he's actually focusing on some things he thinks can galvanize some Republican voters. But I think it's also interesting that you're seeing some of the those stump for Democrats, for Senator Warnock as well, more of making this a choice rather than a referendum. Not just explaining how this could impact Congress, but also saying, look, just look at the comments of the opponent here. Look at some of the gaps. Look at some of the crises. Look at some of the accusations against him as well. And also remember that we've been here before in terms of a runoff election. Just another note on the early voting, there are some prominent Democrats that are pretty excited about some of those numbers. Yesterday, last night, before the state dinner, Keisha Lance Bottoms, as well as Chuck Schumer, went out of their way to say they've been looking at those numbers and to continue, and really much were touting some of the early voting turnout. We'll see how it turns out.
Yeah, we count them all on Tuesday. Hope you'll join us for that. Up next, President Biden proposes an extreme makeover of the presidential primary calendar. Iowa loses its place at the front of the line. New Hampshire slides down, too. Now, a little history. If you remember the state that changed everything for Biden in 2020, you will understand who's on first. How about this for a Friday flashback? You remember this map? This is the 2020 Democratic primaries and caucuses for president. I remember it. President Biden now, though, proposing a dramatic overhaul of the 2024 Democratic nominating calendar. Take a look. The Biden proposal strips Iowa of its first-in-the-nation caucuses. That's a 100-plus-year tradition. Instead, the new first-in-the-nation honor would go to South Carolina, then New Hampshire and Nevada on the same day, 1 week later. After that, Georgia and Michigan would move up. Now, Why with these changes? Why this proposal from the president? You look at the map from 2020. The White House position is this would put more diverse states, more diverse economically, more diverse demographically, more diverse geographically on the calendar. But let's be honest about the raw politics at play here as well. Iowa went first in 2020. That was a Pete Buttigieg state. That's Pete Buttigieg green there. Then you had New Hampshire. You notice there that's Bernie Sanders blue in New Hampshire in 2020. Then we went out to Nevada. Also, Bernie Sanders blew there. And so when you come back to the national map, what happens next? Well, what's this? This is South Carolina. Joe Biden written off as done until this big primary night. This is what propelled him to the presidency. And he wants to make it first now on the calendar come 2024. He also wants to move up Georgia. That's a lot of Biden blue, to the tune of 85% when you look at that right there. And he wants to move up Michigan, another state, a competitive state, but where he ended up winning big in the end. Jim Clyburn, remember, he endorsed Biden back in 2020. He's the senior congressman from South Carolina. He says for both parties, he thinks his state going first is a good thing.
The person that has won the South Carolina primary has gone on to win, with one exception, the general election. Mm-hmm. And that's on both sides of the coin.
Right.
George W. was out of it when they got to South Carolina.
Interesting.
He won South Carolina and went on to become president of the United States. So if you look at that state, it is the best laboratory.
CNN's Jeff Zeleny joins us at the table. You're just back from the meeting where Democrats are talking about this. There have been a whole number of proposals for as long as I've been doing this, which is long, long, long time. This one seems to have bones. And because he's the incumbent president, is he going to get his way?
I mean, it would be extraordinary if he wouldn't, because he is the leader of the party. And this is what the White House sent out in a letter. And he had a private conversation with the leaders of the Rules and Bylaws Committee, it's called. It's in the weeds, but it's very important, of course. So, yes, most certainly he will get his way. There is some grumbling, though, of course, from Iowa, of course, from New Hampshire. And, you know, we're likely to see some fights. New Hampshire believes it's their God-given right, really, to have the first in the nation of primary. And they may go forward with it. We've seen that before. They could be stripped of delegates. But look, this is actually what this is the Biden Protection Act. If someone else tries to challenge him in 2024, if he runs, this really squelches the opportunity for that in a more progressive place like New Hampshire or Iowa or in Nevada. So this really helps his own. Like, the question is he actually going to run? We don't know the answer to that yet. But there's no question that Iowa and New Hampshire are not diverse. But we should also remember history. Barack Obama believes that he would not have become the nominee if he wouldn't have started in Iowa. Iowa, that win, as Margaret remembers, we covered the Obama campaign closely together. Iowa propelled him to finally win in South Carolina. So we'll see how that works if South Carolina goes first. But the history is important to this, but the Biden team wants to blow this all up.
So let me flip it for the very same reason. Yeah. Iowa propelled Barack Obama. Iowa propelled Jimmy Carter.
It did.
Iowa sent Joe Biden packing. That's where I first met Joe Biden 35 years ago this winter in Iowa in the 1988 campaign. Didn't happen.
And in 2008, I think it was about 1%. Yeah. Like, right? That's when he dropped out and ultimately became Barack Obama's
2020
running.
As well.
Right. Yeah, there are questions.
To your point, if Joe Biden runs for re-election, he is most likely, almost certain to win the Democratic nomination. But do you get embarrassed by a challenger? In the age we live in, somebody's going to run. And so do you get embarrassed? And where might somebody get 25% or 30% and somewhat embarrass the incumbent president? Iowa, a lot more likely than South Carolina.
Yeah, and that's exactly, as Jeff was saying, part of the reason here. It is causing a lot of tension, as Jeff was referring to as well, among these Democrats in these key states. I talked to one of them this morning, Ann Custer. She's a New Hampshire Democrat. She said that they made the case to the White House as a delegation, urging them not to move forward. She indicated that no matter what, New Hampshire was still going to try to move up its primary. They believe they say it's in state law for them to be first in the nation, and they may do that. So we're going to see some internal party tension, and we'll see the impacts of that.
But look,
as well.
I think Biden has the benefit of the backdrop of his argument also being true. There is more diversity and size in these other states.
Sure.
It is important for African Americans to have a stronger voice in the Democratic Party nominating contest. All of these things, you know, happen to be true. And yes, Obama benefited from the Iowa caucuses, but the second time around, South Carolina was happy to embrace him. And I guess the first time around, it was much closer than anybody thought it would be. Black Democrats in South Carolina fell in love with Barack Obama in 2008 and were really divided between the Clinton dynasty. Once that Clinton dynasty was...
John Edwards was in there.
Yes, it's complicated a little bit. You're right. So I just think aside from the Biden Protection Act, which is exactly what's going on here, and a reward to Jim Clyburn and a nod to the demographics, there's something else going on here, which is that in the Democratic Party, there's a lot of consternation about whether the left, the progressive base, has too much sway over Democratic Party politics and whether that hurts them in nationalized races. Right. By moving the contest to slightly more establishment ground, while diversifying them, I think you get away from that, and it changes the context and the dynamics of the policy debate, the debates that are, it's not just about the candidates, but what are the policy debates?
You have a more diverse economy.
The promises and there.
You have a more diverse population in a South Carolina, a Georgia, or a Michigan, but you also have a more diverse economy, a more interesting stretch of younger voters, older voters, different voters, Latino voters, Asian voters are growing in many of these states. So there's a good argument for the changes on the demographic level and the face and having more diversity in every way.
Yeah.
But there's also the question that, you know, if you're Joe Biden, this is, you look at how did I get here?
Yeah.
Everybody, they usually don't change the rules because that's how a president, during a presidency, because that's how they got there.
Right.
But he stumbled in the first three.
Yeah.
So he's thinking, well, wait a minute, actually. In his mind, it started in South Carolina.
When did his momentum change in the 2020 election, right? I mean, it was really, especially after South Carolina's, especially after Clyburn's endorsement as well. No doubt that for in recent elections, you know, going back historically, black voters specifically, especially black voters in a state like South Carolina, have been the reliable coalition for the Democratic Party. It's also been the coalition that has benefited, that has supported now President Biden. And you saw that in the 2020 election. So as these questions continue about 2024 and his electability, it's clear we can say that this would be a lift.
So help me with a little Friday mischief. Parties can do this anyway. Parties can do it if they pay for it. They can do it any way they want. But normally what you want is for the state government to adopt it. So you use the state political system. The state government pays for it. So if you're Nikki Haley, do you want South Carolina to, yes, jump and move up first and say, take that, Donald Trump? I'm going to put South Carolina first. If you're Donald Trump, do you pick up the phone of the South Carolina governor and say, don't you dare? Don't you dare? I mean, what happens to the Republicans here? Georgia, again, if you're going to have a primary system and the state pays for it, Georgia would have to move as well. You have a Republican governor there. This could get interesting.
It's going to get very interesting, and it could. The parties have not always aligned exactly on the same calendar. Right. Like, there have been instances in recent history where they've been on different days, but they've largely been the same early four states. It's a huge problem necessarily because Nikki Haley, say if she was running, some other Republicans may skip South Carolina because they think it's her home turf. But I think a bigger thing about this, just aside from South Carolina, is Georgia and Michigan.
Mm.
Very, very important, really changing demographics in Georgia in particular. But Michigan, I was talking to some people this morning at the meeting, Michigan does not have party registration.
Right.
They don't register by Democrat or Republican. So is there a chance for mischief or for Republicans to come over into the Democratic primary if they're number four or five on the calendar. So a lot of things are being discussed about this.
Yeah, that's what they've, remember, for years, New Hampshire has the open primary as well. People talk about that. So this is the beginning of a very interesting conversation. We'll follow through on it. Up next, some giant legal setbacks for Donald Trump and some giant decisions as the January 6th committee holds a key meeting today to discuss its final report. Another major legal defeat for the former president, Donald Trump. A federal appeals court scrapping the special master review of the documents seized from Mar-a-Lago. Trump now has 7 days to appeal. But the court was unanimous in rejecting Trump's argument and in rebuking the lower court judge who granted the request for a third party to review those documents recovered when the FBI served its search warrant at Trump's Mar-a-Lago. Let's discuss. Joining me now, CNN's Paula Reed, CNN's Sarah Murray, and the former federal prosecutor, Renato Mariotti. Paula Reed, to you first. The Justice Department had said this was an overreach. It was unnecessary. It doesn't need a special master. Now that the special master will go away, assuming Trump either doesn't appeal or loses that appeal, which most people think is likely, what does this do to the pace of the investigation?
This allows the special counsel to move this along. We know time is of the essence. A lot of concerns about this investigation going too far into the 2024 presidential cycle. But this was the first big public victory for the newly appointed special counsel. And this removes an obstacle to his investigation because the special master was this independently appointed third party going through all these documents, trying to decipher out what could be privileged, what should investigators not have. And that slows down the entire investigation. And we knew this wasn't going to go well. I was down in Atlanta for these arguments. Three GOP-appointed judges, two appointed by Trump. And it was clear that they had concerns. They said, look, if defendants, even former presidents, can interfere in investigations like this, that would be a problem. Now, to the question of appeal that you mentioned, They're mulling it over right now. But we know one of the tactics that the former president always uses, right, is delay. It's not expected that he would succeed, but even if he appeals and loses, that could delay this just a little bit longer.
And Renato, to that point, sometimes, especially when you get to the appellate level, the justice will say, this is a tough call, and this is how we decided to do it. It was a tough call, but here's where we see it. These three judges saw no tough call. They write, the law is clear. We cannot write a rule that allows any subject of a search warrant to block government investigations after the execution of the warrant, nor can we write a rule that allows only former presidents to do so. Either approach would be a radical reordering of our case law, limiting the federal court's involvement in criminal investigations. Both would violate bedrock separation of powers limitations. If you read this decision, Paula notes you could get some delay out of appealing. It doesn't sound to me, this is your wheelhouse, that there's any legal grounds.
Not at all. I would be absolutely flabbergasted if the former president won an appeal. Just to be clear, John, you know, I am a criminal defense attorney now, and if I had the ability to do this every time any one of my clients had their premises searched, I'd be initiating lawsuits, trying to get special masters. The federal courts will be swamped with claims from people who've had their homes searched, their cars searched. They don't want that, so I just can't imagine the federal judiciary agreeing to that. That's why Judge Cannon's ruling was so outside the mainstream.
Sarah Murray, you're up on Capitol Hill, the January 6th committee, a big meeting today. They're trying to come to agreement on their final report, exactly how to order it, what to put in there, what to emphasize, including whether to make specific criminal referrals to the Justice Department, and including what do they say about the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 Republican members of the House who refused essentially to cooperate, including the Republican leader and the man who will be the chairman of the Judiciary Committee. What are we expecting?
That's right. You know, this meeting has wrapped up, so we're trying to get some more details about what went on. But we didn't expect any major decisions today. I mean, the reality is they know that they are up against a deadline. When you talk to committee members, they keep saying, we're about to put our pens down. We know we need to get this report to the printer. But they also need to make, as you said, a number of serious decisions. You know, they've talked about criminal referrals very seriously. Obviously, the Justice Department does not take their cues from Congress, but this committee believes that they could be sending a strong signal about people who they believe may have committed crimes, and so they were expected to be discussing that today. You know, they also just wanted to talk about how do you put forward potential evidence of perjury, potential evidence of obstruction of justice, potential evidence of witness tampering in an effective way. And when it comes to these Republican lawmakers, you know, I was talking to Benny Thompson about this yesterday. He said essentially three options: ethics committee, contempt of Congress, or do nothing.
And Renato, as we wait for the January 6th committee and this question specifically of criminal referrals to the Justice Department, what do you make of this? A judge ordered the number one and the number two in the Trump legal counsel's office, Pat Cipollone and Patrick Philbin, to further cooperate, additionally cooperate with the federal grand jury. And we have video of Mr. Cipollone actually going into the courthouse today. It is, well, you help me on the question of how unusual that the White House counsel and the deputy White House counsel would be told you must cooperate with this criminal investigation into January 6th and other election interference questions.
You know, actually, John, I'm not surprised by that ruling. And ironically, there's some very strong precedent that was established by Brett Kavanaugh and when he was working for Kenneth Starr. Kenneth Starr was trying to obtain testimony of the deputy White House counsel in that investigation, and the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals made absolutely crystal clear that the need for a criminal investigation and a grand jury to obtain testimony outweighed not only executive privilege, but any attorney-client privilege between the president and government attorneys. So a very big advantage for the government there, and why they're basing that investigation on D.C. Very strong precedent.
Covering the White House back in those days, you just sent me back on memory lane with the Brett Kavanaugh, Ken Starr decision there. Renato Mariotti, Sarah Murray, Paula Reed, grateful for your coming in to explain all this to us. We'll stay on top of those stories. And up next, to the global stage and signs of change in China. Some tough COVID restrictions are being eased, that after widespread protests across the country. Top officials in China say the country is entering what they call a new stage and mission in its fight against the coronavirus. New video shows some residents tearing down barriers despite strict COVID lockdown measures. And some restrictions are being eased. Days after we saw, of course, unprecedented public protests in at least 19 Chinese cities. CNN's Ivan Watson tells us more from Hong Kong.
John, the Chinese government has not declared that it is ending its strict zero COVID policy. Instead, senior officials are saying they want to tweak it. They want to make it less painful, basically, for the Chinese population. And this is as we continue to see these kind of spasms of frustration and anger from ordinary residents. At least three different videos emerging from three different cities of ordinary Chinese people breaking down the barriers that authorities erect around their communities when there are fears of a COVID outbreak, trying to cut them off from the rest of society. And we're seeing a kind of piecemeal response from different cities. One city saying, okay, we're going to reduce lockdowns, lift them in some neighborhoods. Another city saying, you don't have to get a COVID test every 72 hours to ride public transport. These types of measures. But we are also seeing kind of the lengths that police will go to try to prevent organized shows of dissent, calling a protester who participated in a protest in Beijing Sunday night. We've heard a recording of this with a police officer saying, "We know you were at the protest because we detected your phone there. Come down to the police station. We're going to interrogate you." That shows you almost the paranoia that the security forces have about organized protest. But meanwhile, the costs continue to add up for society. Formula One just announced that it is not going to hold the 2023 China Grand Prix in China due to the COVID restrictions and difficulties. John.
Thanks to Ivan Watson for that. Up next for us, another setback for the president's student loan forgiveness plan. His last hope now, the Supreme Court. Topping our political radar today, an important rebuke to the reprehensible, a lashing tweet from the president of the United States that restates a clear truth. Quote, "The Holocaust happened. Hitler was a demonic figure. And instead of giving it a platform, our political leaders should be calling out and rejecting anti-Semitism wherever it hides. Silence is complicity." That sentiment from the president is undeniable. The reason? Unrepentant anti-Semitism spewed by the rapper Ye, formerly Kanye West, and the very conspicuous silence from most Republicans. Ye, just yesterday, gracing the airways of Alex Jones, a conspiracy megaphone, and expressing his love, yes, his love, for Hitler and the Nazis. 26 million Americans hoping for up to $20,000 in student debt relief now will have to wait on the Supreme Court. The justices will hear oral arguments on the president's student loan forgiveness program as soon as February. No decision expected, though, until probably next June. The last of Arizona's 15 counties, Cochise, has now certified the midterm election results. Cochise doing that only after a judge's order. Two Republicans previously had delayed it. Statewide certification now on Monday. Soon, President Biden heads to Boston for a royal meet and greet with the Prince of Wales. The royal couple traveled across the pond for an awards ceremony, but made some time to visit the TD Garden, watch the Celtics take on the Heat. The president was out late last night for his first and a star-studded state dinner. Veeps, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, returning to the White House. The singer John Legend, along with his wife Chrissy Teigen, also among those dining on butter-poached lobster and caviar, along with the comedian Stephen Colbert. The presidents and the first ladies posing for photos before the event. Jill Biden in Oscar de la Renta. Brigitte Macron wearing Louis Vuitton. And the Republican leader, Kevin McCarthy, was asked about dining in the same house as Hunter Biden.
How does that feel, knowing that many people in your caucus want to investigate him?
Well, I'm at dinner with my mom, so I'm going to have a great time.
Thanks for your time. Have a good weekend. Ana Cabrera picks up our coverage right now.
When you work next level. And when you play next level. And when it's time to sleep, Sleep Number smart beds are designed to embrace your uniqueness, providing you with high-quality sleep every night. Sleep next level. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, the Queen Sleep Number C4 smart bed is only $1,599. Save $300 for a limited time, only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com. Prices higher in Alaska and Hawaii.
Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number smart bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.